Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 85 for May 21st, 2010. An album cover. Alright, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, and all that other stuff that's vaguely related. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff!
Hey, Michael. It's, as always, great to be here. And just so you know, try as I might, I really can't remember the name of our show anymore.
We Have Communicators.
Yeah. I was doing a Mac Jury podcast the other day.
And you were like, I'm on that other thing, that other show with the guy and the, I don't remember his name, but it,
yeah,
we do something with Star
Hamilton
Trek.
Had to tell me the name of the show.
Oh, boy.
That's not really good.
It'll catch on. We Have Communicators.
Well, it's a very clever and cool name.
Mm-hmm.
It's
just too clever for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't remember my own address, so the fact that I can't remember the name of this podcast shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Palmer's here from Beat Week Magazine. Hey, Bill.
You know, every time I'm gone for a while, I come back, you guys have changed the name of the show. I would never change the name of my publication, so I don't know what's... never mind. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my fourth name now.
I've missed you, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
I've missed you, too.
It's great having you back, Bill. Okay, Adam Christensen's also here. I totally covered up a joke, didn't I?
You're treating Adam like he's the Sean Connery on Celebrity Jeopardy. He's like, Connery's also here. Moving on.
Yeah. Oh, man. Can you play that part? Can you be the Sean Connery? Can you, what is it? I can't think of any of the silly things he said, but I love that.
Not a fan of the ladies, are you, Johnston?
Yeah, not a fan of the ladies, are you, Trebek?
I know the lines. I can't do the accent.
anal bum cover? An album cover? You know
some
what I'm talking about.
Some of you can't say on a family-friendly show, you know.
It's just an, you know, cover for your anal bum or whatever that is.
Do you have a bum somewhere else on your body besides your anal bum?
Okay, we need to talk about real things. Adam Christensen, the wonderful Adam Christensen from the MacCast is also here. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you for being here.
And you couldn't tell.
Okay.
That whole section. But yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. So before we get to the news stuff, the website, wehavecommunicators.com, you can type that into your browser and it will take you currently, it'll just forward you back to the old site, but it will take you eventually to a new site. So that domain is there, wehavecommunicators.com, or optionally, if you want to type in something shorter, WHC Podcast, which stands for We Have Communicators Podcast.com. So WHCPodcast.com or wehavecommunicators.com. And, there will be a website there eventually. And you can also, we get a lot of feedback from you guys and we love it. But unfortunately I don't like to read things. So, or at least I don't like to read things out loud on a podcast. So I've decided that, I will set up a Google Voice number for people to call in and offer comments and stuff like that. And when we ask a question like, hey, we don't know this thing, can one of you smart people call in and tell us about it? Then, there's no number right now, but you can email right now if you have something.
I can't wait for that number. I'm going to leave all kinds of messages.
Can the commentators call too? Can I get
I'm going to.
I hope you guys do. Feedback@wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. So if you don't want to call a telephone number, if you want to record like on your iPhone or on your iPod Touch, make a recording and then send it in via email, you can do that. We have... it's feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And
now, Michael, is it true that there's been a delay getting the website up because you've set up a Mac 2 CI and you're hand coding everything in simple text?
No, I'm just not doing anything. I'm spending a lot of time. I'm sorry, that wasn't very improv of me. I'm supposed to say yes and, right?
Yeah, but you know what? It's too late. You've already ruined it. So.
I know, I did. See, I went to Max FunCon and I learned about that. Improv stuff with my new pal Jordan Morris.
See, it was supposed to sound like witty, clever banter. And
instead of me cutting you off and saying, shut up, Jeff.
You totally screwed it up. I hope you're satisfied. You've ruined the show for everyone.
We'll edit this out. Okay, so iPhone OS 4.
No, you won't.
I know I won't. That's the joke. Okay, iPhone OS 4. File sharing in iPhone OS 4, just like the iPad. So if you plug it in, go to iTunes, and underneath your applications, you'll see a file sharing option. So, you know, when you do get to 4.0, when it's official, I highly recommend using the beta.
So it'll have crappy file management too. Yay!
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you read my mind, Adam. Yeah, you know, the news that the file sharing is going to be in iPhone OS 4 for the iPhone, to me, is a horrible disappointment, because not because you can actually get files into the iPhone, but it's because it tells me it's going to be the same crappy system that we already have.
Ostensibly, most likely, I would say.
Get Dropbox, be done with it.
Yes, get Dropbox by Goodreader and move on with life.
It is interesting, though, and I mean, we'll see how many or few people actually use the official version if it's as bad as y'all think. But it is interesting that Apple's not only bringing these, you know, high-level computer functions to the iPad, which we think of as being a computer, but also to the iPhone. You know, I would have thought there'd be a point where they'd say some features are iPad only because we're not going to pretend that a 3-inch device is a computer.
Well, that's
and yet here it is.
That's what they were doing initially, but they just have to do something to continue to propel the iPhone forward, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't feel like... I mean, I get that, like, with the Mac OS X, you know, now they just give us new features because, yeah, they're just making stuff up. They ran out of ideas a while ago. I didn't think we were there yet on the iPhone to where they're just filling in gaps that, you know...
I think they're real gaps. Don't get me wrong. I don't think they're just superfluous. But, yeah, iTunes is a big bowl of suck. a big box. What did Steve Jobs say? A bag of hurt? Not about iTunes, but that was Blu-ray.
Blu-ray,
iTunes is a bigger bag of hurt.
It's a bag of crying kittens.
Yeah. And also in 4.0, they've tweaked the way you close applications. I don't know if we covered that. We talked about the media controls off to the side, so... You know, now, you know, right now in 3.0, you can double click and get the nice little pop up and hit play pause. But now you'll have to do double click and swipe and then do it, you know, all for convenience. But you can now, with applications that are running in the background, tap and hold on a single application, and you can close as many as you want, kind of in the same style as you can delete applications from your home screen. So it's not as complicated. I still think that the multitasking interface so far is still pretty bad.
So now I haven't played with that. So let me get this straight. The method for deleting an application and the method for quitting an application now are almost exactly the same in iPhone OS 4?
Yep.
Yes.
That rocks.
So this is why betas are no fun.
to be fair, it's a very distinct
It is. It's red with a minus.
No. But I mean, you have to be in that multitasking screen to use the same gestures to, you know, quit a background application. But so it's not like you're going to accidentally delete an app or anything like that. Crazy like that.
I think there's more potential for that. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't know how bad a new interface gesture is going to be until they put it out there on some unsuspecting people who weren't in the room when it was designed. Like with the Safari 4.0 beta tabs in the menu bar, which was the worst thing Apple's ever come up with in the history of mankind. And, you know, it was gone.
I beg to differ.
I rather like that.
Because you haven't used the hockey puck mouse, apparently.
Okay. Oh, I did my time with a hockey puck mouse in the 90s. Okay. And I enjoyed it, actually.
Hmm. Oh,
I have small little baby hands like that. Saturday Night Live character with the doll.
Okay.
But you know, they're very soft. Which worked great for your career as a hand model.
Well, let me just be clear. I thought you all were going to jump in and defend the tabs. Was anyone defending the tabs, or was you just saying that there have been worse things?
I think it looked nice. It irritated me and confused me, and I eventually turned it off.
Okay, cool. All right, well, I didn't mean to turn this into a Safari thing. I just thought I'd turn it into a Safari thing. So
that's cool.
Back to your regularly scheduled, whatever the show is called.
Whatever we're doing. 4.0 beta 4, it has also been released, and they have more wallpapers, and I think they changed some textures and stuff, and they still have that fantastic, wonderful bubble wallpaper, too.
And if you press on the bubbles on your screen, does it pop?
You know,
it makes your phone look like it's wet, though. It's the slippery than wet edition.
It makes it look like you just retrieved it from the toilet.
Pour some sugar on me. It's not even the right band, let alone the right album, but it's the right decade, so we'll go with it.
Okay, and there are some more wallpapers, and I think Gizmodo actually posted those. So if you're interested in getting those.
They steal them from.
What was that, Bill?
We both, Adam and I both, at the same time, tried to make a joke about where did they steal them from.
Oh, yeah, like they don't have access to stuff. Gizmodo. Oh, what else do we have here? Internet tethering may be coming in 4.0, according to
whatever.
A pop-up thing.
Okay, tethering stuff has been in the OS for a while now, and now they're seeing it again and going, OMG, WTF, BBQ, it's going to be on AT&T now.
You all have it wrong. It's not OS 4.0, it's OS 40. It's coming out in 2039, or whenever, you know. Got the decimal.
Yeah, that's an arbitrary decision from AT&T's. By the way, I would like to mention that I heard from a lot of people regarding our question about if there are carriers who provide free tethering with their iPhone plan. There are many carriers that do that. Just to clarify that. Yep, globally. Globally,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get that really sweet deal. Is it from Verizon where you get like the $30 phone and they throw in the tethering for free?
Isn't that the Palm Pre?
No, I didn't think it was a Palm Pre. It's one of the phones that does that has built-in hotspot support. So you can pick up a phone for like $30 and then just use that to tether all your devices.
So, see, if you record yourself saying Ralph de la Vega and then play it backwards, Satan.
Yeah. No, it just says no tethering.
No, I mean, you guys heard about the statements he made this week about why they're not worried about anybody moving to Verizon when Verizon gets the iPhone.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, basically, our AT&T contracts will keep our customers with us and loyal.
Okay.
Because it's really hard to get out of their contracts.
You're right. It does say Satan when you play it backwards.
Well, okay. Now, to be fair, when the new iPhones come out, AT&T's plan is to offer you the same contract, but it comes with a lap dance.
No price cut, just a lap dance.
Too many jokes, too little time.
Between that statement, between the poor phone coverage that I received at Macworld, between their plan of making you pay to extend their network with that, what's that device we're always talking
about?
Microcell?
The
microcell. Yes, that. And not bringing tethering. And the fact that I still think they're going to try and charge everybody a whole nother $30 or whatever for the tethering as well. Just evil.
You know, I think the reason AT&T doesn't need to worry about customers bleeding away to Verizon for the iPhone is because I don't think we're going to see that happen until we have the really big 4G rollout.
I agree with you there, but
and when that happens,
yeah, they're going to go and exit. I mean, people are going to mass exodus. I know people just despise AT&T and they're only there for the phone.
I was all ready to leave AT&T the minute the Verizon iPhone rumors started, but then I ended up getting a USB modem for my laptop from Verizon. And God, are they an evil company, too. I could do an hour long, and I'll spare you, but in my mind, they are 97% as incompetent, lousy, and evil as AT&T, and that's from being a customer of both of them simultaneously and going all across the country with both of them. They both just suck donkey, you know what.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So a lot of people probably will switch over, but some of them may find the grass is almost as brown over there too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about that today. I honestly, if at WWDC it was announced that there's a Verizon option, I don't think I would change. I think that it's probably going to be just about as crappy on Verizon as it is on AT&T. Now that may change. My thoughts on that may change when I move out to the Bay Area, because as we know, it's the suckiest out there.
Well, so Here's my take. I'm in the same camp. I mean, I left Verizon because they sucked. They sold me crippled phones. They were horrible customer service, all those reasons. And I was worried when I was going to go to AT&T because I had heard bad things originally. In this area, they were Singular back in the day, right? But they bought Singular. And having switched, I've been perfectly happy with them. But I've talked to many, many people who are in other regions and other parts of the country where it comes down to coverage. You know, the phone can only take you so far. And I know people that are suffering through bad AT&T coverage and dropped calls just because they want an iPhone. And if they could get on Verizon, they're going to switch. I don't think they're going to care that they have a family plan and they have to move their entire family and it's going to be a big hassle. I think they're going to think it's worth it because, hey, guess what? At the end of the day, your phone needs to be able to make phone calls.
I think I heard the statistic from our friend macOS Ken Ray on one of his episodes of his wonderful podcast that it was like 8% people responding to a particular survey about whether they would switch to Verizon if that option were available. People who already have an iPhone on AT&T, it was something like 8% would actually switch. And I think those 8% would definitely be people who live in those areas where there's just really terrible AT&T or no AT&T service.
Right.
But I just feel like it would be too much of a hassle and I wouldn't really benefit that much.
I'll tell you, I hear a lot more Verizon users claiming that they're hearing millions of iPhone users complaining about nonstop drop calls than actual iPhone users complaining about nonstop drop calls. I mean, Verizon users are hearing things through a different set of ears, and not to accuse them of this, but it could just be that they, you know, they're looking for rationalizations or for good reasons why they, you know, are smart in not having bought an iPhone on AT&T. And every, you know, it's like the whole thing, like you want someone to agree with you. You know, you walk up to them and, hey, you've got an iPhone. I hear you got drop calls on that all the time. And the guy with the iPhone is like, what are you talking to me? I'm on the phone. No, I hear you got drop calls all the time. Yeah, okay, sure, whatever, drop calls, go away. And then the Verizon guy walks with us. I knew it, drop calls all the time. There's another one.
Yeah, all right. But taking it back to the tethering thing, basically it's the same screen. So if you go into general network on your phone right now on 3.0, if you have tethering enabled via hack or whatever.
The profile hack?
Sure. Yeah. There's another option that says set up internet tethering. You go in there and then you turn on tethering, just a little toggle that'll enable you to turn on USB and Bluetooth tethering. What this reminds me of is the MMS thing, because MMS was obviously enabled in 3.0 as well, and it took a while for it to be enabled by AT&T, and that was something that they had to push out via carrier update, and they also had to turn it on their network. So I'm guessing this is just a placeholder thing.
It's doesn't the current OS have? I mean,
yes,
every
the current
phone
OS
since
has it
since
yeah.
they announced tethering has the tethering in there.
Yeah,
it's just not.
I'm not sure this indicates anything about what 4.0 will do in relation to AT&T's plans and tethering.
No, absolutely not. All it indicates is that the tethering support that was added into iPhone OS 3 is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not surprising.
And it hasn't been removed, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been taken out.
I just don't see tethering catching on as a mainstream thing. They should have done it by now. Certainly some people want it, but no matter how simple they try to make it, it still involves carrying two devices and plugging one into another just to get onto the internet. And I could be totally wrong. I just don't see it catching on as a mainstream thing, especially now with people buying the iPad with 3G built in. Not all of them are buying that model, but, you know, okay. I wonder if the moment has passed on tethering.
Well here's the Verizon thing, you know, where they're doing that $30 deal, it's using Wi-Fi to share the connection. So you don't even have to plug anything in. And you can have multiple devices sharing that tether at the same time. So that would be a much better way to do it for the iPhone.
Yeah, but I feel like by sharing over Wi-Fi, you're probably using way more battery life than you would over Bluetooth, right?
Yeah, but who cares?
Okay,
but still, my iPad or my laptop.
How many people are going to know the difference?
Right. That's how I do it on for to my iPad using the MyWi application is over Wi-Fi.
here's something, I've been seriously, I don't make that many phone calls on my iPhone, right? I make a few. It's important. I need to have a phone. But I could go out and get a burner prepaid phone. My problem is when you start adding up all the costs to get your data. So I have my iPad, unlimited data, $30. I have my iPhone, unlimited data, $30. I'm at $60 already, locked to two devices. I also have a notebook that I take and use some places sometimes. And sometimes there's not Wi-Fi available. Man, I'd like to be able to use that. And so I look over and you see something like the MiFi on Verizon that's $60 a month. It's like, do I, kill my AT&T contract, get a burner phone that's really cheap just for phone calls, and then get one of those, and then I can use my iPhone with that. I can use my iPad with that. I can use my laptop with that all at the same time if I really want.
You can just jailbreak and buy MiWi, which is $10, and then you can get internet on your iPad from your iPhone over Wi-Fi or to your computer. I don't know if it does
support multiple at once. Tethering on the iPhone, that's the problem with tethering on the iPhone is it's my understanding it only supports one device at a time.
You can actually, I'm pretty sure you can hook up one computer via USB and then the other via Bluetooth, and I have gotten that to work.
But what a hassle! Before. What a hassle! I mean, the thing about a device like the MiFi is it works.
Yeah, it's Wi-Fi,
and you turn it on, and it works.
Yeah,
it's not.
There's still another device to carry, another device to keep charged, another charging solution to travel with.
That's the downside, and that's why I haven't pulled the trigger. Is that it's my understanding that it runs on battery. You've got to recharge it, so there's all those hassles. So I'm with you there, Bill.
I agree. The prices are borderline criminal, but I think they will eventually come down at some point from just market forces one way or another. And I think at the end of the day, every computing device you buy that's even quasi-mobile is going to have a 3G, 4G, whatever built in as an option. And you just hope that the pricing somehow becomes reasonable so we're not being killed like that.
Here's my thing is where in the States, because I know they have these internationally, where in the States is the company that will sell me a prepaid SIM that just does data, a micro SIM that I can just pop into my iPad and use and compete with AT&T. We need competition, I guess, is what the problem comes down to. Is none of these carriers compete.
The rules are completely different in Europe, and I'm sure we don't want to get into a political thing about the pros and cons of government regulation or whatever, but in Europe, a lot of countries, or maybe the EU or whatever, has a law that says the carriers have to have a certain number of towers every certain number of feet based on population density. We have nothing like that in this country, and you can argue that there would be pros and cons to that as well, but we have almost zero cell phone regulation since that industry has existed in this nation, and these are the obvious, and there would be, pros and cons to it, but these are the obvious cons that we're stuck with: extremely high prices, extremely crappy service, and every company colludes to make sure no one's giving anything that would be expensive to them.
Right. I mean, look at AT&T's international prices. The amount we're paying per megabyte for that bandwidth just seems astronomically outrageous to me. I don't get it. And it frustrates me because I thought, someone's got to have a prepaid data-only package. I think Sprint has a data-only package for a USB modem that's prepaid. But even when you start breaking down the prices, it's like, you get 20 megabytes for $20 a month or whatever it is. It's like ridiculous. You can't do anything with 20 megabytes of data.
There is that guy who tried did we talk about the guy who was trying the unlimited data on his iPad?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he, I guess he got away with it, no problem, and at least there's that AT&T isn't charging for the...
Yeah, that's if you go unlimited, but I mean...
Right, yeah. It's still a lot.
Still $30 a month.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay, moving right along. Oh, did you guys see that some customers are seeing their eligibility date to upgrade to a new iPhone has been changing from... November 21st to June 21st.
Really?
Yeah, and that's implying to some that we'll see the new iPhone drop on the 21st. But that's a Monday, which is strange.
Yeah, a Monday launch doesn't sound right.
It's also, I believe, the same date just 1 year after the 3GS was launched, right? Was the 3GS launched on the 21st?
Sounds about right.
Sure.
This is why I skipped the 3GS, though. I had when I went to buy the 3G, there was a delay of a couple of months. I had a problem with my contract. It had the wrong name on it. By the time I got my 3G, once I had done the 12 months to get a 3GS, I would have been pushed, 2 months past the presumable 4G launch. So I'm like, now I'm, maybe I did that for nothing. If people's dates, I should check mine, I guess. But, I think that's why I skipped the 3GS, and I wonder how many other people skipped it. Because it's like, if I do this, I'm going to get hosed on 4G pricing.
It was the delay between when the 3GS came out and when my contract was finally at a point where I could get the better pricing. I decided I will just simply wait.
Oh, so you're not using a 3GS. I didn't know that.
No, I still have my 3G.
Well, you'll be getting a 4G, right?
That's the plan.
That's the plan. Okay, so we're talking about iPhone 4G stuff now. There was another iPhone 4G prototype found in Vietnam. And this one seems to be a little newer, I guess, because instead of having XX gigabyte on the back, now it's a 16 gigabyte. This one actually turns on with a weird screen. I think it says Inferno. But the screen actually turns on. There are no screws on the bottom. It still has those weird seams, but they were able to take it apart and determine
and
that
it didn't break it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
How much did they pay for it?
I don't think it was said. I don't think they said. I think the guy bought it along with an iPad is what how the story goes. He bought it along with an iPad in the U.S. and brought it back, which, whatever. Sure. But it was determined that there is an A4 in there, according to iFixit. They checked out the visible numbering on the on one of the chips, and it should be an A4 as well as 256 megs of RAM, which is what is currently in the 3GS and the iPad.
That's interesting, but yeah, Not surprising.
I'm just going to say that I think that the leaked 4G iPhone that we're seeing, I don't think that's what we're going to see when Steve pulls something out of his pocket. I think we're going to, because the buttons on the sides just look too like, let's make a prototype kind of deal.
In hindsight, absolutely, there was no reason to believe that was going to look anything like it. If Steve Jobs had lost the phone, or Phil Schiller, yeah, he's got the real one. The idea of some low-level employee we've never heard of was allowed to take something off campus. We know, we've read stories about Apple's campus security and the red rooms with the light on when you, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The odds are, and I've seen, there's history documented on this about the original iPod development. A low-level employee working on a prototype is working on a completely fake product except for the one specific area they're working on. If Gizmodo really wanted to find something real, they would have figured out what this kid was doing at Apple and presumed that aspect of the prototype to be
correct. He's a baseband engineer. They did figure that out. So
he was testing network then?
Yeah. There's no reason
why he had it at a bar. He was probably allowed to. They said, go test this fake prototype that has the real iPhone baseband in it.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking, and that's why I wanted to – I should have gotten John Martellaro on here, because he used to work for Apple, and he's written several really good articles on how Apple goes about disguising these things, right? Like we saw the case that looked like a fake 3G case or it looked like a 3G case. Right. Like what Bill said, there was that fantastic article from Wired about the iPhone's development and how, like Bill said, it wasn't the full thing. It was Apple never gave people who were working on it the full thing. So yeah, we may be seeing the same screen and the same capabilities, such as the camera and all of that stuff, but the final design, who knows?
Well, the platform or the case that both of these leaked prototypes are in totally makes sense as a testbed platform, because it's easy to pop apart,
yep,
unless you're Gizmodo, and swap out the components and put it back together.
Yeah, yeah.
So it totally makes sense to have a prototype platform like that. Now, the final version may look very similar to that, but it will be more refined, it will be polished, and it will have buttons that match the rest of Apple's portable electronic lineup.
It's also possible that even if that was the general look of the new iPhone, it isn't anymore. because, you know, Apple always has multiple prototypes and different things going on. They may have said, well, crap, this one's out there already. We need to go with plan B. We need to find, you know, just to maybe not to show up Gizmodo, but just so that the new iPhone doesn't feel like a been there, done there product when it's revealed. Let's go ahead and make it look completely different than what it was going to look like, the one that people saw in Gizmodo.
I'm not sure they would respond that way, but I think that I don't think Apple would let a final production design out of HQ. I think they have it in that, you know, that room in the iPhone 3GS ad with the with you know the Mission Impossible scenario. Right. I think it's very much like that, and I don't think they let that
stuff out.
That's
a documentary.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
It's happened before, though, right? We saw the Fat Boy Nano before it came out.
True. Yeah.
You know,
we didn't see physical.
But don't we always get those from people developing the manufacturing plant, the places where they would reasonably have the real thing? Because you can't have, you know, at some point you have to have the thing manufactured, and those people in those factories are going to see it. I can't think of a case where we've ever had, you know, an Apple employee lose a product that turned out to be the real thing, or even a rogue Apple employee. I mean, usually the things that get leaked by Apple employees are the fake stuff, like the what was it called? The breakout
Asteroid.
Box. I was going to say Android. I knew that wasn't right.
Asteroid. Yeah.
Yeah. This would be. It just doesn't. I don't know. This is just such strange. Something hasn't added up from the start. You know.
On the design thing, I really don't think Apple. I don't think Apple cares that much about the design. Steve Jobs has joked about these leaks before. I think they'll take it tongue in cheek. And so if it is the real design, I don't think that's Apple's main concern. I do think what was sort of cited in the warrant, the affidavit for the warrant, is likely correct. That Apple's bigger concern is that this thing getting out in the media this early impacts their sales.
Yeah, yeah. And people reviewing something that doesn't work.
I don't even think they care about that. I think they care about the bottom line, and that is people are going to hold off on buying a phone now that may have bought it. And I was interviewed, or I was called for a quote for a piece on this, and somebody said, well, doesn't everybody in the tech industry and Apple people already know that Apple, you know, puts out new iPhones in June? And yes, that's absolutely true. The bigger damage here this time around is that this thing really went mainstream. I mean, Dave Letterman was doing top 10 things about it. You know, so it got out to more of the general public who normally probably wouldn't be aware that, oh, I shouldn't buy an iPhone in May.
Right.
You know, because there's going to be a new one in June. So I do think it's going to have a negative impact on iPhone numbers for this month. Absolutely.
You think word is spread to everyone, and I agree. I mean, it's seemingly everywhere. You think everyone would know, and yet in the past week, and I won't say who, but someone in my circle upgraded from an iPhone 3G to a 3GS and then called me and said, oh, by the way, is there a new iPhone coming out? And this is not someone who lived under a rock. You know, obviously someone who doesn't read my publication or yours. But, you know, I was kind of surprised to say, hey, wait a minute. 100% of the world hasn't heard about a new iPhone coming. So you do wonder just how – just obviously bigger than previous leaks that nevertheless left the geekosphere. But, I mean, it hasn't permeated to all corners of the planet, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, people don't care so much when they hear iPhone thing on popular late night TV. Their eyes probably glass over a little bit and passively listen and maybe play with their iPad a little bit while he's talking about it.
Well, I don't know. I think that's what Apple cares about. I think they care about money. I don't think they care about losing a phone or someone sneaking the prototype as much. Obviously they care about all of it. They've had tight security. They don't want anything getting out. But I don't think Steve Jobs loses sleep over, oh, somebody saw the iPhone a month before we're going to show it off.
Right, yeah. DigiTimes is claiming that in addition to the all the fun stuff that we've seen in the leaks, that the screen is going to be improved, as we've speculated, as John Gruber pointed out, that he has heard about. It's going to be double the resolution, 960 by 640, but the new information is that it may have fringe field switching, FFS technology, which improves the viewing angle of the screen as well as viewing under sunlight. Yeah, which is wonderful, as someone who's tried to read a book on their iPad has realized, and unfortunately it won't help that, but...
Let's talk about that, though. I mean, the difference between the iPad and the iPhone screen. I generally don't have trouble using my iPhone screen outside.
It's fantastic outside.
Yeah, so that's more a symptom of the iPad screen, right?
I think so.
I think a lot of that's because of the size of the screen.
Yeah, because it's the same technology. The only difference is the size, right?
Well, it also has the IPS technology, which I'm not sure how that impacts sunlight viewing.
That's not in the 3GS screen?
No. That's a new thing for the iPad.
Now, offering technology in the iPhone that gives you better viewing angles and better visibility in bright sunlight makes sense, even though most people haven't really had issues with that, simply because the iPhone is the device that you're most likely to pull out of your pocket when you're walking down the street so that you can make a call or answer a call.
Yep.
Well, in a car, too. I mean,
or in the car. Yeah.
People use them hands free, and you still glance at the screen to see who's calling and what have you. And if you can read it quicker and it's you know, you're not having glare, then it's going to be safer, too.
Also sounds like an advertisable feature. I mean, faster, more battery life, more memory. Those may be the reasons most people upgrade, but they have to have one feature. And on the 3GS, it was the video that they can advertise the heck out of it on TV. And that sounds like something you could really capitalize on, you know, showing, not that they're going to show somebody using an Android, but, you know, somebody squinting undone or something like that, you know, used in some kind of Apple format. But that may be the big advertisable feature.
Well, the other
Aren't
thing
you going to be doing that anyway because of the higher resolution screen.
Right. Well, the other thing that I notice when I'm out running with my iPhone, yeah, you can see it really well, and it has the ambient light sensor, and it turns up the brightness in brighter situations, and that's what enables you to see it. If this new technology allowed you to see the screen better with lower brightness,
it'd be better for battery life.
Yeah, yeah. But onto the higher resolution thing, I'm not sure. It's one of those things that we've been talking about. That what are developers going to be doing? Will they have to scale up their applications? Probably, as we've seen with the iPad. It doesn't seem like there's a very simple way for Apple to just say, okay, draw this a little larger, draw this a little larger. It's going to be, it has to be stretched. So I wonder if we're going to see, I think we're going to see the same sized buttons. It's just going to be a denser interface, right? Jeff?
That's my assumption.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Also 33% thinner for more battery life, battery capacity probably. And another... what else? I think this is from the same report from DigiTimes that we will also see 512 megabytes of RAM as opposed to 256, which we see in the 3GS and the iPad, which I'm not sure about. I wonder why they would not put 512 in the iPad and put it in the next iPhone.
I was curious about that, about that as well.
I think they're wrong.
You think DigiTimes is wrong?
I think DigiTimes is wrong.
Okay. That not the first time.
I know. Big shock there.
I didn't want to be the one to say that.
That's right. I'm more than happy to say it. I'm already the guy that started talking about Gizmodo stealing stuff on the show. So I'm okay calling out DigiTimes, too.
They might raid your house. You never know. Be careful.
DigiTimes might raid Jeff's house.
Well, yeah, the thing is, they'll take the wrong stuff.
And then they'll misreport on it.
Bump, yes. Bum.
We seized a Windows machine from Jeff Gamet's house and three Android phones and a...
And a toaster.
And a Windows mobile phone, 7.2.
Yeah. This toaster appears to have a slot for a camera on it.
DigiTimes seems to tend to not be really accurate on direct Apple stuff, per se, but when they're talking about deals from component suppliers and stuff like that, I think they are kind of on sometimes when they hear that, you know, Apple got a contract.
I think they have a better track record.
Got a contract. Yeah.
And in fairness, nobody's going to be 100% right when they're doing that kind of thing. You know, there's no way of knowing that everything you're reporting is accurate.
You know, I guess part of the thing that frustrates me too about all these rumors and speculation about new features and things like that is very often I find myself just thinking, well, duh. You know, it's the next generation device. It's going to have the next generation technologies that we hear about. You know, a better megapixel camera, double the memory, better resolution screen. I mean,
longer battery life.
A white
shorter
front
battery
panel.
Life. I'm going to make that one up.
Like, it's like, here's the new iPhone. It has a lower resolution screen, less battery life, and a lower megapixel camera.
Ta-da. We call it the iPhone Classic.
We call it the iPad.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's like sites obsess on this stuff, and they want to get into the nitty-gritty and details and want to know what it is, but it's all the things that it always is every year.
Sure. Also, there are photos of what looks like a white front panel. So in addition to having a white back on the 4G, we may see a white front as well, which, I don't know, I have to wait and see if I want it. But I've been going with the white on my
phones. I can't imagine that being a good idea next to the screen, especially when the screen gets darker in ambient settings, and it just doesn't sound right.
I don't think it'll be that confused. Are you saying that the...
No, I'm saying, you know, if you're in a pitch black room, your iPhone screen is pretty dark and it still looks bright to you. But if there's a white surface around it, that white surface isn't going, you know, going away. I'm guessing. I'd have to see it, but it seems like a strange move.
Apple, according to Silicon Alley Insider, Apple may be adding Facebook integration into the iPhone OS, which I don't like Facebook.
Well, okay. if Apple's all about privacy, which they said in their event, then
you don't want to go with Facebook.
Nix that deal now.
Yeah. No kidding.
Do you want me to explain to you what it really is?
Sure.
Because it's not. Oh my God! Apple's adding Facebook to the iPhone OS. What they did was they patented an application idea and a workflow idea to be able to easily exchange information with other people wirelessly. And one of the examples that they gave was the ability to take information and share it wirelessly between people and with social network sites. And so they used Facebook as an example of a social network site in the patent. And it wasn't about making a Facebook-specific feature in the iPhone. And it also described a system where you could use this, say, in a business environment to send someone maybe like their task list for the day or the week.
So this is basic
schedule changes,
like contacts
it's
and stuff.
Data exchanging, yeah. And, you know, but it can trigger specific actions. So like I send you your weekly work schedule. And when I send that to you, it automatically triggers the information you wanted to send back to me, which could be like your report of everything you accomplished last week, plus the time off requests that you want for next month. And then they have another example of using it in an educational environment, like in a school, where a teacher can distribute assignments and collect homework. And it's all done wirelessly through your iPhone, your iPod Touch, your iPad, whatever. And it's not a Facebook feature patent. That was just an example in there.
Now, this all sounds very cool. But are you looking at the same one, the Silicon Alley, saying that they have a plugged-in source? Or do you think this source is just reading a patent?
I think the source is reading the patent or explaining the Facebook feature to them.
Sure. Okay. But what they say in this piece is that it would be for contact syncing, which I think would be terrible.
Well,
in the patent, they
showed being able to share the information for contacts and use that as part of your social network setup. So keeping track of all of your contacts that you have social network relationships with.
Gotcha.
So I think that they're talking about the exact same thing, and they're misinterpreting the information.
Mm-hmm. So at Google I.O., they announced that they have acquired the wonderful Simplify Media. So if you don't remember what Simplify Media did, you run...
Is that why it shut down?
Yeah, well, apparently that is why it shut down.
That's an awesome service. Tell everybody what that is.
Yeah, so I was
really sad when that went away.
You run an application on any of one or more computers, and then on your iPhone you open up the Simplify app, and then you have access to all of your iTunes and I think photos as well, but mainly it was great for iTunes sharing. So you could, what that allowed you to do is stream your entire library, regardless of whether or not you had it on your phone. So they're what they announced is that they they're taking that technology and building it into the Android OS. So you'll be able to stream your music to your Android phone, which implies to me that we'll never see it on the iPhone again.
Yeah, but they're going to give us iTunes streaming, right?
Via Lala, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I sure
are we
hope
back
so.
To that already?
I want it. I want Lala. I'm so sad to see it go. I use it every day because it's going to be done at the end of the month.
Only for a couple more days.
Mm-hmm. But it's just so nice to discover music that way. But anyway.
I didn't see the story in here, and I wanted to bring it up earlier when we were talking about the horrible file management in the iPad and now coming to the iPhone. And I really do think, and I'm really hoping, that all these rumors of this big data center that Apple's working on, the iTunes streaming, and Mobile Me going free, becoming free, which was a rumor that kind of came out this week too.
Yep.
I'm really, really hoping that all that stuff is coming together as Apple's new cloud initiative that says, look, if you have an iDevice, we're going to give you in-cloud storage. And that's going to be integrated into the OS, and any app can take advantage of that. So if you store stuff up in the cloud, any app will have instant access to that through the cloud. Same thing with your iTunes music. If you buy music on iTunes, you buy movies on iTunes, you know what? You don't have to sync it over. Sync over the stuff that you want. But hey, if you need want to listen to that track and you want to stream it, you can stream it through this cloud service because we have a record that you bought the license for it.
That would be the best thing of the year.
It solves a lot of problems, I think, that the devices have.
Yeah.
You could solve this file management problem.
Although,
and that's why Dropbox is so great, because that's what Dropbox is. I throw stuff into the Dropbox folder on my Mac, it goes up to the cloud, and then I know I can get it from other iPhone, iPad apps because they're integrated with Dropbox. If Apple had their own thing and it was built into the OS and any developer could take advantage of it in their app,
now,
that's the solution.
If Apple allowed us to stream our media from our computers to our iDevices, what would compel people to purchase larger device sizes?
Are people still buying because of larger device sizes now, though?
Yeah, I don't think they are.
Really?
People shifted from an 80-gigabyte classic to a 16-gigabyte iPhone.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, they're already dealing with having to manage files, and they're frustrated by it. So I think, the only rumor I don't buy is it being free. I'd love it to be free. And if it is free and Apple can subsidize it some other way. But I think even if it wasn't free, if it had those features, you'd have people lining up to give Apple their $99 a year.
If the cost of Mobile Me included this new streaming feature
and in cloud storage that was integrated into the iPhone OS. And so every app leveraged it. Like, if every app that you need to get documents in and out of could read or write from that.
I think we're in unicorn territory with this stuff now. I don't think we're going to see any of it.
We hit unicorn territory when people started talking about Mobile Me for free. That is not going
to even if they charged $1 million, does anyone think it's a good idea to stream stuff over 3G? I mean, it sounds like a great solution around the house over Wi-Fi. Even
I do it all the time with Simplify.
Music is fine, absolutely. I don't know about videos and TV shows.
You couldn't pay me to walk out of the house with no music on my iPhone and have to stream it over that network.
But
I don't even have bad network. It's just, I wouldn't do it out of principle.
It works very well.
One or the other, though, Bill. It would be you have the collection of songs that you sync over that are the ones that you want. Those are still there. But what about that one time that you're on a trip and you get delayed at the airport and you suddenly decide, I want to listen to something else. I've been listening to this all weekend. Just to have that option, to say, oh, that thing's in my library. I want to listen to that album right now.
Yeah, that's kind of how I use Simplify.
Call it up on a whim, I think, is a nice bonus. I don't think it's going to replace syncing.
I don't know. I mean, you're assuming a level of geek thinking from the mainstream. No matter how simple they make it, it's just a place that I think most of the mainstream won't want to go and would have to be dragged kicking and screaming even on an occasional basis like you describe. But to me, it feels like a tethering thing. It feels like something that for now is for geeks and power users. And even if it would work well for everyone else, they're just not going to be interested. And I could be wrong.
That's an excellent point. And you can be sure people at Apple have thought the exact same thing. And I sometimes forget that not everyone gets how the technology works as well as we do. And as an example, a couple nights ago, I was speaking at the Denver Apple Pi user group talking about the iPad. And I said, oh, and it has Bluetooth support, and continued on. And a hand goes up. And this person goes, what's Bluetooth? And that was just a crystal clear reminder to me that just because we get what all this technology is and how there's all these incredible ways for us to integrate things, unless it is so simple and transparent to use as the average user, it won't work, which means Apple probably won't do it. So as much as we would love to be able to stream content from anywhere, if Apple can't make it so that it's so drop-dead simple that no one even realizes what they're doing, I don't think it'll happen.
There's another side to that, though, too. It has to be drop-dead simple, but the other side of it, and this is what I'm alluding to with the Mobile Me service and stuff like that, is it has to be everywhere. It has to be on all the devices and all the places I want it to be. And the best example I can give of that, of somebody who's getting it, is Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah, I have Netflix on my
right.
iPad.
Netflix
I have Netflix
totally
on
it.
My, you know, inboxy. I have now Netflix for my Wii, and I'm watching tons of Netflix all over the place. And you couldn't give me enough money probably at this point to get rid of my Netflix subscription.
Yeah, Netflix totally gets it. They have found an easy way to make accessing their service, well, essentially ubiquitous.
Right, and that's what Google now is going after with Google TV and all these other guys. The problem is they're now behind Netflix because Netflix has a big head start on all these devices and platforms. They're in all these places, right? And that's a little bit of what Apple's been able to do with the iPhone and the App Store. The iPhone, I think a lot of people are locked into the iPhone because of the App Store more than anything else. They're invested in their apps, and their apps are everywhere. They're on their iPad, they're on their iPhones, they're on their iPod Touches. And they're not going to want to give those up to have to go over and rebuy all that stuff on another platform.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But people are invested, and they'll stick where they've made that investment, unless you give them a reason that is so insanely compelling that they're willing to throw away that investment and move somewhere else.
Generally speaking, there are not a lot of former Apple users. People don't leave Apple. I mean, they do on occasion, but you don't run into a lot of former Mac users. You don't run into a lot of former iPhone users. You know, Apple has a stickiness where once you're in, you're kind of in, and you continue to get further in over the years as opposed to pulling back out.
That's engineered. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Oh, it's absolutely not a coincidence.
Okay, so we have our iPhone picks coming up and maybe a few other things to talk about. Before we do that, I have to talk about our sponsor, which is Citrix and the wonderful product GoTo Assist Express. Many of you guys listening, and I think everybody here, tends to be the tech support for the family. So if mom has an issue with the computer, you get a call and, you know, how do I do this thing on my computer? And then you start working, you know, walking her through, you know, okay, click this. What do you see? Okay. Is it that one? Are you seeing this thing or that thing? And then click this. And that whole walkthrough process is just, you know, terrible. And you could get so much done so much faster if you had access to their computer, and that is what GoTo Assist Express does for you. You can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Ally. What GoTo Assist allows you to do is you get this, you sign up, you get the application on your computer, and whenever somebody gives you a call, all you do is you open the app, it gives you the URL and a special session ID number. You tell them the URL, and then you tell them to type in that number, and then within 30 seconds to a minute, you're seeing their screen. You can control it. You can chat with them. You can send files back and forth. You can see a full system profile. You can see all the apps and processes that are running and everything that's installed. There's 128-bit SSL encryption, so it's very secure. You don't have to worry about people seeing your keystrokes or anything like that. And actually, if you are a support professional, you can do up to 8 sessions at once. So you can update one computer go to the other computer, do some stuff, and you know, just keep working while other stuff is going on other sessions. And you can try it free for 30 days by going to gotoassist.com/Allie. We thank them so much for their support of the We Have Communicators podcast. I wonder if they know that it's We Have Communicators.
I don't.
All right. How are we doing, guys? Are we good for a little bit more, or do we want to go right to the picks?
Let's do a sequel.
I think we're good for a little bit more. I want to talk about the no cache thing.
Okay, do it.
I feel bad because I probably should have broken this story, and I didn't. About a week ago, I got to find this guy's email. A guy emailed me to tell me about this, and I was going to cover it on my show. I think it was after I recorded my last show, so it was probably last week, mid to end of last week. And this was a guy, he's not a Mac owner. This was going to be his first Apple product, and he had gotten the cash out of his bank, took the cash to the Apple store, went to buy it, the iPad. Actually, they had a little bit of adventure even just finding an iPad. And they were driving all over. They finally found an Apple store that had the iPads in stock. They went, and he goes to pay for it, and they go, hey, we won't take cash. And it was 7:30. And yeah, he could have used a debit card or something like that, but they didn't have the money. The funds weren't in the bank. They were in, it was in his hand. He's like, I have the cash here. And it put him off so much that he's given up. He's not going to get an iPad. Because it really frustrated him and bummed him out.
When that whole thing with Apple not taking cash came out, I was really surprised because on the opening day, I bought two iPads with $100 bills. I just kept laying the cash on the table.
You paid $100 each?
Yeah, well, I'm cute, so I get away with a lot. But no, I bought two iPads and I paid cash for both.
Apple Store?
And at the Apple Store. There were no questions asked. It was, oh, okay, great, here you go.
Right. Well, they know who you are.
This is May 13th, this guy emailed me. And I probably should have made a bigger stink about it and forwarded it on to Steve Jobs and all that stuff, but I didn't.
Am I making too big of a leap in assuming that this policy was because of people trying to buy them in quantity and ship them overseas? And
yeah, that's what Apple maintains. But I mean, here's my thing. At the end of the day, this is the United States, and we've you know, of course, that means Apple can do whatever they want, right?
Right.
But the flip side of that too, though, is this is cash money. This is U.S. currency at a U.S. store, and we've just gone through a financial crisis where everybody's like, you should be spending cash on stuff. You shouldn't be using credit cards. And here's Apple saying, we want you to use a credit card, or we want you to use, I mean, you can use a debit card probably. I'm assuming you can use a debit card.
Yeah, I've done that.
Right. But, you know, maybe people don't have debit cards. There's people that live off of cash, and you're going to turn down a sale, you know, with somebody who has American currency.
Sure. They're not allowed to do
makes
that.
No sense.
But,
well, it sounds like a panic move that was overdone. Oh, God, people are selling them on eBay. They're buying 100 at a time. How can we track them? Credit cards. And they didn't think it through because they're just so desperate to.
Right. Yeah, so now exactly. The new policy
is
you have to.
Not thinking.
You have to sign up with your. You have to. What do you have to do? You have to use your iTunes account and register. And that's how they're tracking people buying the iPads with cash, right?
Oh, you have to register in store. Is that how they're doing it?
Yeah, you have to sign up with your iTunes
account. Which they were doing anyway.
Were they?
Weren't they?
Not with the iPad.
They were giving people the option on day one. They would hook it up to iTunes and set it up for you, right, Jeff? When you went in store? It was an option. They didn't make you, but...
Yeah, what they did when I went into the store, we bought the iPads and leave the store. I'm standing outside the store pulling the shrink wrap off, and an employee comes out and says, you know, you have to activate that before you can use it. Were you planning on using it right away? And I went, well, yeah, I'm going to write an article on it right now. And he says, well, let's just go back in. We'll plug it into one of our Macs, and we'll activate them for you, and then off you go. And so we went back in, and they did that. But unless they had actually said at the time, look, this is a brick until you activate it, we wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking they probably at some point realized, oh, people are getting pissed off because they're leaving with a brick. And so they started telling people, hey, would you like us to activate this for you before you leave the store so you can play with it at Starbucks down the street?
Yeah. But I mean, just the negative experience. I can imagine the frustration of somebody going in with cash and then they're saying, "Well, you can't buy this thing."
Yeah, that would be very frustrating. Now, didn't we go through this with the iPhone at 1.2?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's also kind of a hassle for them to do it anyway because their POS system is set up for card primarily. There is a drawer on the floor that they can access for cash transactions, but they don't usually do that. But I think it was...
Well, right, because most people pay with credit cards.
Sure. And it was at least Ron Johnson, the VP of retail... dude did say that it was a, two per customer issue. So.
Well, they fixed it though, right?
They did. Yep.
They did.
So if you go in there, you register with, on
but
iTunes.
But only after a kind of a news.
After a big stink was created.
Big news report was made. And that's why I was saying I probably should have.
You should have made the stink, man.
Stink. Yeah.
You should stink more often.
I'm going to let traffic you get ahead.
Yeah, okay. I don't think that way. See, that's why I don't have a blog like Gizmodo.
Very clean person.
I don't understand this link bait stuff.
Yep.
Wait, yep, you're making the mistake of focusing on quality content? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You also don't understand the whole criminal element, so you'd never be able to cut it.
I want to know, though, did Gizmodo pay cash for their iPhone?
Yeah, they
apparently
did.
Yes.
Or a check. Bill for a $1
did you read that affidavit?
No,
no,
I haven't
couldn't bring myself to.
Oh, it's amazing. It should be like a TV movie. I said in my podcast that I guarantee you it will become a ripped from the headlines like CSI or Law and Order.
Oh yeah, the awesome thing is they don't even have to write the script. All they have to do is tell the actors, okay, now hop to page 7 of the affidavit.
I can't wait to see who plays the Steve Jobs character.
I did read
Stan Jobs or whatever they call him.
The guys are running around like hiding like evidence. You know, they're like throwing stuff
doing
in bushes.
It poorly.
Like,
yeah, throwing crap in bushes.
Who's gonna die? Because when they fictionalize these headlines, somebody always dies. So is it the journalist who's gonna die or the guy
probably,
in the
probably the
die?
Roommate who said she was gonna get an apple.
Yeah, it's gonna be the roommate, yeah.
Right.
Was murdered by Steven Jobs, right?
No, it would be by the guy who found the phone.
It would be by Jackson Chang. That's who kills her.
Yeah. Jackson Chang.
Jackie Chang.
Or Gizmondo.
Jackie Chan. Gizmondo.
But it is a great telling of the story in there.
It is. I'm gonna have to read through the rest of it.
It's a lot of fun. So if you haven't read it,
I have it in my Insta paper. But yeah, I read part of it. At least the parts where they were hiding evidence and oh man, you're right. It is fun. Okay, so check that out. I think we're gonna put it in the show notes. So whcpodcast.com. You can check out the show notes for this episode, and I will make sure to put a link to the affidavit stuff in there.
What I want to comment on that, you're asking in there, she does, the roommate does say she saw the guy with like $7,500 in cash. So there's like $2,500 that are unaccounted for that supposedly came from maybe some other source.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
So he did have cash.
Steve Jobs got another email from someone. Why no printing on the iPad? What gives? He says it will come, which, you know.
That has to be there. I have actually a question for you guys. I just asked this to a couple of other people who had iPads. Who here has iPads? Does everybody?
Yep. Yeah. iPad.
So the question is I am finding that my iPad never gets docked into my computer. Like, I do not connect it to iTunes.
Oh, you're right. I don't do that either.
Yeah, mine gets connected probably once a week. And that's only because I've done a bunch of software updates on my iPad. And instead of re-downloading them to iTunes, because they're going to sync across anyhow, I just plug it in and let my iPad take care of it.
Yeah, so what I'm finding is that I really wish that Apple, one, that the printing will be there because that'll be helpful. But even more so, I really hope that they give us a way to update the OS directly on the device and to, again, get files on and off of it via cloud or some other thing. And then I would never have to plug the darn thing in, and it would be awesome. I have no need to hook it into iTunes, really.
Do you not have a keyboard dock at your desk?
I do, and you don't want to get me going on the keyboard dock either. That thing's the biggest POS ever.
I think you should expound on that.
I was going to save it for my show. no, actually, what has been awesome for me about the keyboard dock is it just confirmed my suspicion that a touchscreen iMac is like the worst idea ever. Because that's exactly what the iPad is with the keyboard dock. The only rationale I could see for the keyboard dock is it's somebody who works at home at their desk and needs to do a ton of typing.
Yeah, I've never understood why you want the...
If you have to do a ton of typing on the iPad, but one, you're locked in one orientation, so that sucks.
Yep. Right.
Right. Two, it's impossible to get in the darn thing. Like, I can never get the dock connector lined up. I don't know how it... Because of the curved back of the iPad and the flat thing that the iPad rests against, you can never quite get the angle right. You're like, you know... Trying it, so that's a big pain.
It's probably because the angle that would work best for viewing is not the angle that it sits in the dock.
Well, it's just even sliding it in and out of the dock. It's like I'm always thinking I'm going to break the pins off the pin connector because it's like clunk. I didn't, you know, it's like your first time or something like that. You can't get the two things to meet.
And three, there's a real computer sitting next to your keyboard dock. Use it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's almost like a product Apple has to put it out just to silence people.
Tell you what kills it completely, though. Like I said, unless you're fully just using it for typing, but the problem is that all of the user interface for any application or majority of the user interface for any application you're running on your iPad is touch. So you're constantly having to switch between two planes, between the XY, you know, axis and the Z axis.
And I bet your iPad's wobbly when you're tapping it like that too.
That's not so bad, but it's just completely uncomfortable. It's completely awkward. It's not natural whatsoever. And I've been trying to use it for, you know, a couple weeks now, and it's not getting, you know how some things you think, oh, it'll get better, it won't be that bad.
But it's like a bad marriage, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know about bad marriage.
Well, what you're describing, Adam, is exactly the reason why I use a laptop instead of a desktop. It's really no other reason than the fact that on my laptop I have a trackpad. I don't have to take my hand off the keyboard. I can reach down with one finger. It's an inch away.
Exactly,
and that's why
a mouse and keyboard works, though, too. You know, a trackpad's even better because you're staying in one zone.
Reaching for a mouse is, to me, hugely inefficient. It just slows me down.
It reminds me
of the same thing.
So make it worse. Imagine your mouse is in one plane of existence, and your keyboard's in another. And that's what this is. You know, you're completely moving from a horizontal orientation to a vertical, and you're having to go back and forth constantly.
I wonder if they put out that keyboard just preemptively because they knew some people were going to say, if they didn't put it out, people would say, "Where's the keyboard? I'm not buying one because I might want a keyboard later." Now they put it out, and people want to buy it. But just to shut people up. One of those.
Yeah.
Moves.
So you know, the Bluetooth keyboard is a little better because you can get a Bluetooth keyboard and a basic stand that maybe you can at least switch orientations. But even still, that doesn't work for me because you're switching planes, and that's why the iPad, when you're just sitting on a chair, lounging or whatever, works because the virtual keyboard comes up when you need it. You type what you need to type, and it goes away, and you never have to leave one area or one orientation for working on it. It makes sense and it feels natural and comfortable. Using the keyboard dock on the iPad is the most uncomfortable user experience I've ever had with a piece of electronics. For me,
I've noticed the docking issue. I have the standalone dock for my iPad, and I've noticed the same thing. Like it takes me so many tries of trying to get it exactly lined up into that pin. So I know what you mean.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because my iPad, I use it at my desk in conjunction with my MacBook Pro all the time. And I have Apple's case, so I set it up where it's at the angle where the case is lifting it up. And what I ended up doing was going out and buying Apple's secondary charger for the iPad, the one that has the long power cord, so I can reach the only outlet I have left in my office and charge the thing at my desk while I'm using it.
Yeah, pro tip for everybody. But I'll let you finish.
Oh, well, I was pretty much done. The gist is I can work at my desk. I can charge my iPad at the same time. It stays in the Apple case all the time. And based on the way I'm using it, I will never buy Apple's dock or Apple's keyboard dock.
Gotcha. And pro tip, I went to when I got my Best Buy, when I got my iPad, I also purchased the power adapter and realized quickly, thankfully before I opened it, that the adapter that comes with the iPad, it's the same one. They just add the extension cord that you get with your MacBook charger.
Right.
They literally add that. And if you want, you can just use the stock charger that comes with your iPad. And if you have a MacBook, just grab that. If you really need the extension and you don't feel like you're going to use it constantly like Jeff does, then, you know, don't worry about buying that thing. I returned mine.
I will tell you one thing about the dock that is working out awesome, and I would probably just go back and get the regular dock, is the line out. So I'm using the dock with my iPad docked into it with the line out going to my speakers, and I'm using that, I think I mentioned that was probably my pick last week, the BT Audio Engine BT1.
Nope.
W1?
Maybe.
That's a really cool little thing.
W1, what is that?
I'll pick it this time.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you can pick it this time.
Yeah.
Maybe I did that on another show. But it makes the ultimate iTunes music controller. So I don't use iTunes on my notebook when I'm, because as Bill, as you mentioned, I have it sitting right there next to my notebook. So it's great for playing music on, because you get the nice full screen album art. It's flipping through. It's awesome for that. So that's how I'm using my dock. I'm not even using the keyboard part.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. On to iPhone picks. Jeff, would you like to go first?
Sure. All right, so my iPhone pick this week is an image editing application called Photogene. And it is the best imaging editing app that I have found so far for the iPhone or the iPod Touch. It's really easy to use. Or I said iPhone or iPod Touch. I meant iPhone or iPad or iPod Touch, whatever. All of them. Okay.
Communicator.
So, yep.
Yeah.
Even the Shuffle?
Even the Shuffle, yeah. Now, the touch interface on the Shuffle...
I was talking about the icky Shuffle, you know.
Oh.
I'll shut up now.
See, I was thinking of the iPod Shuffle, and on that one it actually uses Braille, which I find difficult to use simply because I don't know Braille. But
I just love feeding this guy softballs. He always hits it out of the park.
What a team.
Yeah.
So anyhow, Photogene has a bunch of built-in filters that you can apply to your images. It has image cropping and image rotation, and it can straighten images for you. You can adjust the exposure and contrast and light levels for your images. It gives me the primary features that I need in Photoshop when I'm working with images quickly, like for articles. It's all in this one little thing. And coupled with Apple's Camera Connection Kit, which totally rocks, I can now take photos with my digital camera, plug everything right into my iPad, suck the images off, do image editing on my iPad, and then send them off wherever they need to go. Now, it is not a Photoshop replacement, but for that basic image, color correction sort of cleanup stuff, it's fantastic.
Cool. It's called Photogene, Photogene. I shouldn't have tried to spell that because I clearly can't read.
But you did a great job. We're really proud of you.
Mm-hmm,
and by
I'm learning.
Proud of you, I mean laughing at you.
Uh-huh.
Photogene is not my iPad. I had to.
Are you wearing a glitter glove?
No, but I've turned into Michael Scott from The Office all of a sudden. I've always wanted to go there.
That's good. We need one of those on the show.
You know what they say? If you can't identify who in the room is Michael Scott, then you are Michael Scott.
Ooh. All right. And it's $3.99. Photogene. Adam, you were just talking about your pick.
I was. It wasn't going to be my pick, but I will make it my pick. I think I actually picked this on the last episode of Mac Roundtable that I was on. But it's still a good pick because it's awesome, like I was saying, for the iPad. If you have the dock and you have a set of powered speakers that you want to send audio to, but you want to do it wirelessly. And this, what's great about these is they'll work with any input and any output. It's a pair of little, I don't know if you'd call them dongles or whatever, but they have USB connectors on one end that will give power. You do need power to it. So you can also plug it into just a wall charger if you don't have power like near your speakers. But one is a sender and one is a receiver, a wireless sender and a receiver. And then it has a line in jack on either end. Well, line in on the sender or line in on the receiver. Excuse me if I can get this right. Line out on the sender. So you plug this thing in. Then you just plug a 1/8-inch mini cable from the line out on the dock to the sender device, and then go over to your powered speakers and plug your powered speakers into the receiver, and then it will send the audio from whatever device, the iPad in this case, when it's in the dock, over to your speakers wirelessly. And it does it without any skips, without any, it's flawless and it's very easy to set up. It has a little button on each one of the devices. You press it on one, press it on the other, it links the two together and away you go. And again, you can use it with any line level sources to send audio, you know, wherever you want to send them. So it'll work with your Macs, it'll work with your iPods if you want to do it that way, iPod docks. They're called the Audio Engine W1s. They just lowered the price on them. It's $99 for the little pair. They also have something called the Audio Engine W2 that is more designed for the iPod Touch and older iPods. I don't think it works with the I know it doesn't work with the iPad, and I know it doesn't work with the iPhone 3GS. It's the same thing. It has the receiver side of it that you plug into your speakers, but then on the sender side, it's a dock connector, a little dongle that you plug into the bottom of your iPod.
Are you sure that it doesn't work with the iPhone? Because I have it, and I work...
The Audio Engine W2
yeah,
does not work with the iPhone 3GS.
Yes, it does.
When I plug mine in, it says...
Really?
Are you jailbroken, though, right?
No, it has nothing to do with the jailbreak, and they sent me... when I saw them at Macworld, I said, hey, I have
an older
3GS.
One. When I plug mine in, it says, this accessory is not made to work with the iPhone.
Okay, keep talking. I'm going to go to the other side of the room and grab mine.
Have you tried to... use it even after it says that message? Sometimes you just dismiss it and it still works.
I couldn't get any power and I couldn't get it to...
you know, it could be a time zone thing. You're on the West Coast. Like,
yeah, you have to wait 2 hours.
All I know
wait till you move to San Francisco, Michael. It's going to stop working.
I checked their website where they have a little compatibility for the W2. Where'd that graphic go? And it didn't list the iPhone. It said all of the iPod touches...
I will say this, it has absolutely worked.
Okay. I will try it again. I can't even get it to power on.
I don't know what you call it, model. Maybe there's a longer model number on the bottom or something. It's different.
And I was going off of what was on the Audio Engine website.
You should talk to Brady. It's Brady over there, right, at Audio Engine?
Anyway, that's not my pick. My pick is the Audio Engine W1s, which do work great. And it's really awesome.
On the Lost podcast? I heard everybody dies and it wasn't real.
Yeah. And then we wake up and Bobby comes out of the shower, right?
What are
we
talking
about?
Yeah,
but it's full frontal. It's a surprise.
So Michael, what you need to do is go in and look up Dallas on Wikipedia.
Uh-oh.
The show, not the city.
Right now?
Yeah. Oh, and for those of you that are like getting into Dallas now, all two of you, sorry about the spoiler.
Yeah, that's several seasons in. It's just keep reminding me of how old I'm getting that I remember when Dallas was still first run.
Did you go to a Who Shot JR party?
No, I was a little kid. I don't know why my parents let me watch Dallas, come to think of it, but
yeah, and look how you turned out.
Okay, Adam Christensen.
I hear the music. You're going to say it's working for you.
Yep.
Well, mine's broken then.
Yeah. Get a hold of the guys at Audio Engine. I'm sure they're going to fix it for you. Okay.
Well, cool.
So, your pick.
So the W2, if you want to go directly from your iPhone, iPod Touch, get the W1s if you have other audio sources. Did you try it with your iPad? Because I couldn't get to work with my iPad either.
I'm doing that right now. But I wish the W-2 had a line in on it. Also, I've been told that the W-2, because it's getting power from the device, that it has less transmit power. So if you want the ability to plug absolutely anything in with this system and get better range, you'll probably want to go with the W-1, which is your pick. The Audio Engine W-1,
yep, it's $99.
You can go to audioengineusa.com to find that. And I will get on figuring out if it'll work on my iPad while Bill talks about his pick.
Well, my pick is obvious, but I want to pick it anyway, and not just for obvious reasons. A while ago, Tweety was acquired by Twitter to become the official iPhone app for iPhone and iPod Touch and someday iPad. And that app was released yesterday, unless I'm in a time warp. Yeah, it was yesterday. And it's basically just Tweety 3.0. There's not a lot that's different. They've changed the retweet. They've changed the search a little bit. The reason why I think it's important, though, is a fair number of users, including me, were having caching problems with Tweety 2, where you'd leave the app, come back an hour later, and all of a sudden the most recent tweets it was showing was from 5 days ago, and you'd have to take forever to reload them all. And I was going to switch away from Tweety just because of that, and I know some people who have switched away from it. But they made the announcement, and I thought, okay, I'll stick with it. And as far as I can tell, after 1 day of testing, for me at least, those caching problems are gone from Tweety for iPhone, or just Tweety as they're calling it. With the caveat that it does overwrite Tweety 2. So if you love Tweety 2 and you download this, it's going to erase it from your iPhone and you're stuck with the new one. The biggest complaint out there seems to be that the icon is disturbing because it's a bird that has no eyes.
It's made of suck. I hate that icon.
Yeah, the icon, you know, they're going to have to change that sucker. But that's the only real complaint that people seem to have is the icon.
My big complaint is that it erases all of your accounts.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah, that bothers
true.
Me.
And not like erases them from Twitter, erases them from the Twitter app.
Yes, you have
app
to set it all up again.
Well, you know, we went through that going from Tweety 1 to Tweety 2, and people said,
yeah,
well,
yeah, but
it's
that was new app. This is an right. update. And it did keep all of my Instapaper settings. What? So it wasn't like it overwrote everything.
Is that
maybe because they're going OAuth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's because of the OAuth stuff.
Yeah. Although I think it might have done OAuth before. Who knows? Adam, the W-2 does not work on the iPad.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it just says is not supported, and then nothing happens.
Now, Bill, I had a question for Bill because I know you guys. I saw you guys did a post on the new Twitter app. Did you hear from Twitter, or maybe somebody else knows, and I just haven't had time to look into it. When did they give anybody a timeline when they're going to have it optimized for the iPad? Because that was my disappointment. I was really hoping that they were
right after the acquisition. Lauren said that it was coming. I can't remember. I'd have to look. He either said it's coming later or it's coming this summer, and I'd have to look it up to see what he said. But
I think it was just later. I think a little bit later than when the iPhone version.
Yeah, because I've had to switch back to Twitterific for the iPad because Tweety is, or now the Twitter app is not iPad optimized.
Yeah, you know, I'm using Twitterlator on the iPad. I could not get into Twitterific on the iPad.
I'm just cheap. I don't want to buy another. I already paid for Tweety. I
understand.
Buy another
there's a lot of stuff I'm not happy with on Twitterlator, even though I know there's a lot of people that think it's the best thing ever.
I don't think it's the best thing ever, but I think it's pretty close to being the best current Twitter app for the iPad.
Yeah, which means that there's fewer kittens in its sack of hurt than in the other apps.
Fewer crying kittens, yeah.
Yeah, fewer crying kittens. I mean, the whole Twitter app.
Are you talking about kitten sacks now?
Kitten sacks, yeah. Sacks full of kittens. I'm just finding all the iPad Twitter apps to be a big old bucket of meh.
Also, RSS readers all suck on the iPad.
Don't get me going there.
Which one do I like? Is it NewsRack?
That's the one I'm using.
Yeah, that's what I'm using, and I actually purchased it, and, you know, whatever, it's $5, but I'm not really a big fan.
Do you have NetNewsWire for the iPad?
No. I've heard that it's even worse.
Oh, really?
You know, I bailed on NetNewsWire for the iPhone and switched to Reader because I just got so pissed off with it. It went beyond being a bucket of suck to a bucket of crap. I was so disappointed with it.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try it on the iPad.
Bill's pick is Twitter for iPhone. I guess the biggest advantage to Twitter for iPhone over Tweety 2 is that it's free.
Yeah, well, it earns its price tag at the least.
Yeah, it's free. You get what you pay for.
It is a fantastic application. There are a few weird things about it that definitely reek of other developers working on the application. But for the most part, it's still wonderful. It still has all the great features. There are some new features in there. There are some things that are a little weird. And actually, it looks like there are a few things that are improved about it. But either way, it's free. And I think it's probably the best Twitter app available for the iPhone and the iPod Touch. So Twitter, just search for Twitter in the App Store. And it's the big blue icon with the retarded looking bird on it.
I just said it was free and you got what you paid for. But in reality, Twitter for the iPhone, the new version of Tweety, is still by far my favorite Twitter app on the iPhone.
Yep.
And when my iPhone comes out of my pocket, that's the Twitter app I will always use.
Me too. Okay, so my pick is called Tab Toolkit. And I feel like it justifies a large portion of my of buying the iPad. So what Tab Toolkit allows you to do, it's from the same guy or same group of guys who created Guitar Toolkit, another fantastic application. So Tab Toolkit is geared toward those who play guitar as well as piano. And Tab Toolkit allows you to just keep a library of all the tabs, tabulature or, you know, actual sheet music stuff that you you want to keep with you. So when you're out playing your guitar or your piano or whatever, you have all of that there. And it comes with several tabs preloaded, but it also allows you to upload files from your computer. You can also hit a button. So here's the scenario that I had. I was learning a Pink Floyd song called What's the Deal? And I wanted to play the guitar part over the rest of the instruments, but I didn't want to hear the guitar part, which is what I would get if I just played the MP3 on my computer. So what I wanted to do was I wanted the tabs, the actual chords and all that, as well as everything else. So in addition to being able to upload stuff from your computer, you can hit the download tabs button and it simply gives you a browser. And so if you're familiar with Ultimate Guitar or tabs in general, there are things called it's Guitar Pro, I believe, is the application. And so there are Guitar Pro files available that people create online, free and otherwise. But if you go to Ultimate Guitar, let's say, all I did was search for the Pink Floyd song, looked for the Guitar Pro version. You can also just download a straight tab from Ultimate Guitar. It actually detects what part is the tab part, so it'll download that. It's not as rich as a Guitar Pro, but you can still keep that, and it'll do scrolling for you. But the magic happens when you get the Guitar Pro file, because it gives you, in most cases, all of the instruments, including vocals, and they're all separated, and you can see all that on your screen. You can. What I did for this song was I went and I looked at the actual guitar track, and there's an option to just turn off the audio on that. So I turned off the audio on that, let everything else play, but I was able to see the tabs scroll as I went. There's a fretboard at the bottom, so you can see where your fingers have to go. You see the chords and where each note is in tab form on the screen. You can also bring up sheet music, or you can do a two up, so you can see the tab form as well as the actual musical notation, so you can learn to read music. If you play piano, you get the same deal. You can switch it over to, instead of having the fretboard, you can just see a piano keys instead, and it'll show you where to put your fingers. You can just bring music on the screen, and like I said, it scrolls automatically through there. It'll synthesize whatever instruments are built into the tab. You can change the instruments to any other instrument that's supported by the application. So let's say if I wanted to take that guitar part and turn it into a piano part, I just say, turn this into grand piano. It gives me this, the same notes, and it'll synthesize as grand piano. And you can adjust volumes. You can get a metronome. You can, it has a count in, so many other features that I can't think of right now. It's just, it's one of the coolest applications. If you're working on guitar or piano, for someone who's doing piano, you probably want it even more so because, you know, infinite amount of sheet music and it scrolls for you. So you just kind of put it up there on your piano and it just goes. So it's really cool. It's $10. Tab Toolkit, totally worth the price. If you're into this stuff, totally worth it. And yeah, with that, you can check out GoToAssist Express. That's our sponsor this week. GoToAssist.com/Ally. You can find our iPhone picks as well as the show notes at WHCpodcast.com, or we have communicators.com. I don't know what I'm going to recommend to people because there's more typing with one of those. And you can send feedback. And like I said before, I would prefer if you want to respond to something within the show that you might want everybody else to hear about, I'm encouraging everybody to record a comment and I'll play it on the show. So you can send that to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And so, you know, if you use your iPhone, you can record that. iPod Touch, you can record that. It's really simple. And we'll have a phone number next week that you can call in. Jeff Gamet, you can find him at the Mac Observer and twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure. And as always, it's an absolute blast.
It's an absolute blast to have you, Jeff.
I think I have a tear in my eye.
Aw.
Yeah.
Bill Palmer.
That's sarin gas. Sorry.
Oh, that explains why there's blood coming out of my pores.
What's coming out of your kitten sacks?
Crying. It's weird.
Is that?
Oh, it's a sarin gas. That makes sense. Yeah.
Is that why it's called Beat Week? Because you beat the sacks of kittens?
We were going to call it I Beat Weekly, but we thought that might be too obvious. All those who laughed at that will be punished.
Beat Week Magazine, beatweek.com, and twitter.com/Bill Palmer. Thanks for being here, Bill.
And yeah, can I just quickly say the next issue of Beat Week Magazine coming out on Monday, interviews with Smashing Pumpkins, Kate Nash, and Creed Bratton from The Office. So it's like, you know, even we're impressed by it, so.
Very impressed.
Maybe nobody else is, but
I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Beatweek.com. Check it out there. When did you say it's coming out?
Monday the 24th.
Monday.
You know, I think everyone should go download it, read the whole thing, and then Bill, you can have like a quiz, and we'll know which of the listeners actually read the issue.
How many times does the word "the" appear on page 14?
Okay, and twitter.com/Bill Palmer and Adam Christensen. From the MacCast, thank you for being here, Adam. Yeah,
thank you, and I have an announcement to make, too. My membership site is up.
All right.
So you can now join. You can sign up to become a MacCast member. If you go to member.maccast.com, all the details are there, all the plans. Essentially, what it amounts to is you're going to get three extra episodes a week I've committed to. So a lot of extra content for just a few pesos, a few cents.
And you're contributing to your cup of noodle fund,
yeah,
right?
And you got and people signing up, they're gonna help keep the MacCast going and keep me doing this full time, which is what I'm hoping to do. I'm hoping we'll get there. So this is the big step to doing
it. Worth it.
So, yeah, and it's going well so far. I've got a lot of great feedback and support, and people seem to be enjoying the content. So you can go check it out. You can sign up. And I thank everybody who does.
Member.maccast.com?
Member.maccast.com.
And what are there are different prices and stuff like that, or is there one?
Yeah,
price?
There's options to do a year, 6 months, or a month to month, depending on. So you have lots of options that'll fit your budget and your commitment level.
Check it out, member.maccast.com, and you can find Adam on Twitter at twitter.com/maccast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thanks.
And you can find me on Twitter if you really want to. I don't really talk about the iPhone. twitter.com/michaeljohnston. With that. Another We Have Communicators is what? Picard out?
Beaming
it's
up.
Done.
Is beaming up. Yes. Done.
Oh, there you go.
Make it so.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. No.